It is so good to be back with you guys. As some of you know, I've been on like a little bit of a mini Sabbath break the past couple of weeks, and I had a chance to do some really awesome things, take some classes, and I went back to Abilene, Texas, where I went to seminary at ACU for a ministry conference a couple weeks ago. And it was pretty amazing. I got to reconnect with some of my friends and got to listen to some amazing preaching, amazing worship. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but Abilene Christian University is part of the Acapella Churches of Christ. And so when we were worshiping, it was with acapella, like no instruments, but they had a full team with a beatboxer. I have never worshiped with a beatboxer before, but like, oh my gosh, it was incredible. Highly recommend. But one of the things that we were doing the whole time was it was all focused on narrative and the stories of scripture. And we were given a challenge that week to tell the stories, especially the stories of the Old Testament. We spent all these days just immersed in the world of the Old Testament, which I have to admit, it's one of my favorite two testaments. So it was great. But one of the things that we talked about is that the Jewish Old Testament writers, they didn't just like write these stories down just to be taken at face value. It's not like these stories are just this wooden relic of the past where we kind of are like, okay, that was then, but we have Jesus, so forget it. It's not like that. You see, these stories were written with intentional gaps in the narrative. So plot holes, if you will. There are intentional details that are left out, intentional people that are not included that you know probably were there. And it was intentional. It was on purpose. I say it intentional a lot. I don't want to do that. But it was on purpose. And the reason why these gaps are there is because in that culture, in the Jewish thought, the reason for the gaps was to find a place for you to fit. And it was a way for you to be invited into the story, so that you could walk around in it and you could see, where would I be here? What would I have done if I were in that position? And that's not just true for the readers back then. We can do that today. So today we are going to talk about shalom. And shalom is this Hebrew idea of peace, of wholeness. And it's peace and wholeness within and within your family, and within your community. Shalom is the goal to strive for. It's something that is expected. And when it is broken, there is an expectation that you will do whatever it can, what you can to restore it. So here's what we're going to do. And it's going to be a little different. I want to tell you a story this morning. And it's a story in three parts. And there aren't really going to be any slides, and I'm not going to ask you to pull out your Bibles, because I just want you to walk around in the story with me. Though the story comes from Genesis 32 and 33 with some details pulled in from some other chapters. So you can read that later, but we're just going to talk about it. And after each section, some questions are going to come up on the screen. And you'll have 3 minutes to talk about the questions with the people around you. Now, this is a story about a family. A mom, a dad, and two brothers. But mostly the story is about the two brothers. The parents, they absolutely play an important role in it. You see, the family had a history. Generations of hurt and mistakes and brokenness, especially on the father's side. And all of that bled into the lives of his own family after he got married and had two sons. This family was torn apart by favoritism and lies and theft and anger and rebellion. You've probably heard this story if you've been around Sunday school long enough. It's a story involving a birthright and a bowl of soup, a stolen blessing, two twins, one of them pretty hairy. We're going to go a little bit beyond the old flannel graph today and sit with these people. and get to know them. So at the point where our story begins, these two brothers have been estranged from each other for 20 years. Now, one night, Esau was relaxing on his favorite cushion after dinner. It had been a long day. He'd met with his overseers about a new planting strategy for this season's crops. They were hopeful that they'd finally figured out how to deal with the erosion that had been wrecking his fields, part of this ongoing struggle with the dry soil in this region. Away from the fertile soil will your home be, and away from the dew of heaven on high. The words of his father's blessing rang in his ears again. It had been echoing there for years. A blessing. If you could even call it that. Felt more like a curse if he was honest. But tonight wasn't the time to dig up old wounds. Because tonight, there was hope. Everyone was fed. The livestock were healthy. That was enough for now. Suddenly, the door to his tent cracked open, and his chief overseer poked his head in. "Master, a word." Esau motioned him in. "What is it, Hoshea?" "I just spoke with two men from the north. They say they're messengers from your brother." Esau stood up so fast it made his heart pound. "Who are they? What do they want?" "They come in peace with a message from your brother. He's traveling back to your homeland from his uncle Laban's place, and he's asking to pass through peacefully with his wives, his children, servants, and livestock. He says he means no harm." No harm? His brother had already done enough damage. He'd stolen his inheritance. He'd stolen their father's blessing. Was he coming to take his land now too? No. Esau wasn't going to let that happen again. "Tell him I'll meet him myself, and I'll be bringing 400 of my strongest men with me." Hoshea nodded and left the tent, and Esau dropped back onto his cushion, heart still racing. He looked at his hands, sweaty, shaking. For a moment, he didn't feel like the wealthy chieftain he'd become. He'd felt like the boy he once was, kneeling before his blind father, weeping as he heard that his brother had taken everything from him. Jacob. The heel grabber is what his name meant. It also meant cheat, trickster. And honestly, their mother nailed it. He'd been grabbing for Esau's heel from the day they were born, and he hadn't let go since. Esau couldn't remember that moment, of course, but he'd live with the consequences every day of his life. He was the older one, even if just by moments. By all their customs, he should have been first. He should have been the one to inherit. He should have been learning to govern, preparing to lead in his father's land. But no. His mother made sure Jacob got that role. The blessed one of God, she called him, because of a promise she claimed she heard when she was pregnant with them. So God and their mom thought Jacob was the golden child. Fine. Whatever. At least Esau had his father on his side. Isaac, their father, had raised Esau to be the heir. He was strong like his father. Hunting, providing, defending. He still remembered their walks together, his father's arm around him saying, "You're my boy. Don't you forget that. Your mother, she may have plans for your brother, but you're mine." Maybe that's why Esau made that stupid mistake with the stew. It was ridiculous now, but then he was young. He was hungry and cocky. Who cared about a birthright, right, when you were starving? And anyway, he figured he was still his father's chosen heir. What did it really matter what he said? Esau shook his head and laughed bitterly. It didn't matter. Until it did. It had mattered to Jacob. And it had mattered to their mother. And that's the part that still hurt. His gut twisted as he thought about her. It had been 20 years, but some things don't heal. You don't just get over being betrayed by your own mom. He knew Jacob was her favorite, but he never thought she'd actually betray him, betray their customs, betray his father. But she did. She helped Jacob trick their father into giving him the blessing that was supposed to be Esau's. While Esau was out hunting, she dressed Jacob up in Esau's clothes, covered him in animal skins, and sent him in to steal the blessing from their blind father. Esau blinked back the sting in his eyes. How could she? How could she do that to me? That night still haunted him. The smell of meat on the fire, his father's rough voice as he revealed the plot hatched by Jacob and Rebecca. Your brother's already been here. He's stolen your blessing. There's nothing I can do. Esau remembered falling to the ground, no longer pretending to be the strong one. He begged his father for something, anything, to give him a hope for the future. And he remembered Isaac's withered hand, lifting his chin and speaking those haunting words. Away from the fertile soil will your home be, and away from the dew of heaven on high. You will have to fight for everything you get. And under the shadow of your brother's rule, you will live. But one day, you will break free from the burden he has placed on your shoulders. Esau breathed deeply. Maybe this was the moment. His chance to finally break free of his brother once and for all. He wasn't the same person anymore. He wasn't young and desperate. He was a man now, a leader, strong, and with 400 loyal men ready to defend him. Esau blew out the candle and lay down, but sleep didn't come easily. His mind raced, and his dreams were full of trouble. The messenger, breathless from running back to camp, gasped for air. He swallowed hard and he said, "He's coming. Esau is coming himself and he's bringing 400 men with him." Jacob slumped into his chair, heart pounding, his dinner, lamb and honeyed bread, rising in his throat. He could barely speak. "Separate the livestock and the servants. Send one camp east and one camp west. Tell them that if either hears the sound of war trumpets, they just need to run. Run for their lives. Maybe, just maybe, half of us will make it out of here alive." Then another thought hit him. He called over his chief servant. "We need to send a gift to Esau. Gather our best animals, goats, sheep, camels, donkeys, cows, just send them on ahead to meet him." The servant's eyes went wide. "How many, master?" "Dozens, hundreds. I don't care, as many as it takes. If it's repayment Esau wants, if he needs me to settle a debt, then maybe we can buy him off before he attacks." There's still a chance to save our lives. Hurry, we do not have time. The servant bowed low and rushed off to follow his orders. Jacob stepped outside his tent and looked at the stars. He fell on the ground with his face buried in the dirt and prayed, God of my father, my grandfather, you sent me back here with a promise to do good for my family. I have spent my whole life fighting for that promise. I came out of my father's land with nothing, and look how I've been blessed. But now, all of it could be gone tomorrow. Please deliver me from Esau's anger. The last words he spoke to me were threats, murder. Don't let that be our end. You promised me, God, descendants as numerous as the sand on the sea. Remember your promise. Save me. Jacob lifted up his eyes, and there in the moonlight stood a man, a stranger. There was something in his face, an invitation, and danger. Maybe they spoke. Maybe the man just motioned for Jacob to follow him to an empty hillside. Maybe the man struck first, or maybe Jacob did. It doesn't matter. But soon Jacob found himself wrestling with this stranger, fighting, grappling with him beneath the stars. Seconds turned into minutes. Minutes turned into half hours that turned into hours, and still they fought over and over and over. And then somehow it wasn't the stranger anymore that he was fighting. It was Esau. They were back in the womb, struggling again, fighting for their father's blessing, for the birthright. Jacob had won that fight before, hadn't he? But was it worth it? The stranger faked a move to the left, and Jacob swung, missed, and landed flat on his back, gasping for air. You will not win this, Jacob rasped, his throat raw. He grasped for the man's ankle and yanked him down. Heel grabber, cheat, trickster. Maybe that's all Jacob was, all he'd ever been. He'd always relied on his wits, always schemed to get what he wanted. And now suddenly, he wasn't just fighting his brother, it was his uncle Laban, the trickster's trickster, the one who had cheated him out of 7 years of his life, cheated him out of his peaceful marriage with Rachel, out of his wages for all those decades worked. But Jacob had prevailed, hadn't he? He'd beaten Laban at his own game. He walked away with much of his uncle's wealth. He was fighting again now. And he'd prevail again. No one puts the heel grabber under their feet. Hours passed, and still they fought. Jacob's mind raced. He thought of his father, his mother, his wives, everyone who had ever stood between him and the blessing he deserved. All his rage, his hurt, all of it poured out into this fight. But no matter what he tried, he couldn't subdue the man. No matter what he did, he couldn't outwit him. As dawn began to break over the hills, they were still locked in a fierce stalemate. Neither had the upper hand. And that's when it hit Jacob, harder than any of the stranger's blows. This wasn't about Esau. It wasn't about his parents or his family or getting what he deserved. He wasn't fighting them at all. He was fighting God. Suddenly, a blinding pain shot through his hip, and Jacob screamed, but still he clung to that man. He clung to God. Let me go, the man said. His voice pierced Jacob's soul. This is enough. No, Jacob gasped. Not until you bless me. No more cheating, no more trickery. If God was going to bless him, Jacob would just ask. Just ask. What's your name? The man asked, his voice much softer now. Jacob hesitated because his name was now a mark of shame. Jacob. No more, the man said. Your name is now Israel. It means strives with God. Because you have wrestled with man and you have wrestled with God and you have prevailed. An overwhelming peace rushed over him as the name Jacob, with all its baggage, fell away. The heel grabber was dead. He was Israel. He had prevailed. Jacob, no, Israel, asked, "Who are you? What is your name?" The man smiled and looked at him and said, "Do you really need to know? Be blessed, my son." And just like that, he was gone. Jacob, Israel, looked around and breathed deeply. "I'm alive. I have seen God, and I lived." He stood in the morning light, bruised, limping, in pain, but alive. More alive than he'd ever been. "I'm ready. Today I meet my brother. God, go with me." So how is this going to end? The sun was already high over the hillside when Esau set out with his men. Remember, he warned them, "We're not here to start a war. Stay cautious, keep your eyes open. My brother is cunning, so if it looks like he's planning to do anything to take our territory, do whatever it takes to stop him." His men nodded, falling into step behind their chieftain. They hadn't gone far when they came upon one of Jacob's servants leading a group of animals. The servant stumbled over his words, eyes cast down. A gift for you, my lord. My master sent me with this message. Please accept this gift from your servant. He's here with his family, livestock, and people. All Jacob asks for is safe passage through your land. Esau's eyes narrowed. Servant? Did he hear that right? His brother, the chosen one, calling himself Esau's servant? No. Had to be another one of his tricks. "We march on," he ordered his men. A little further along, they came across another drove of animals. Another servant of Jacob with the same story. More animals, more offers of servitude, another plea for peace. And this happened again and again. Dozens, was it hundreds of animals passed by, each with the same message. Esau's mind started racing. Was this some kind of bribe? Was Jacob like trying to pay off his guilt? What does this mean? He didn't know what to think. Rage from the past, hurt, suspicion, fear, maybe a little hope. All of it tangled inside him. This wasn't how he pictured the march to Jacob's reckoning. "We're almost there, men." His voice was steady, but his heart uncertain. "Just over that hill. I don't know what to expect, so be ready for anything." When Esau and his 400 men crested that hill, what he saw left him speechless. Now he understood where all those animals came from. Below him, a sprawling camp spread across the plains, full of people and animals, servants, wagons, food, tents. Jacob's people. And then he saw them, four women, each with children in tow, walking toward him. He tried to count them. 11 boys and a girl? Some of those kids even had red hair, just like their uncle. Esau couldn't help but chuckle to himself. Then from behind the women and children, there he was. His brother, the one who turned Esau's world upside down. Jacob signaled for the women to stop, and he came forward alone. Esau's eyes squinted. Is he limping? Yes, and badly. The man who'd haunted his thoughts for years looked like he'd spent the night wrestling with something. Jacob moved closer, bruised, haggard, and bowing to the ground as he walked. Once, twice, over and over until Esau lost count. Somewhere between the sixth and seventh bow, or maybe even before, those old labels started to fall away. Cheat, trickster, enemy. Each step, each gift, each glance at those kids with his red hair, they chipped away at the walls in Esau's heart until only one word mattered. Brother. Esau felt the anger, the betrayal just slipping from his shoulders, breaking free of the burden he'd carried for so long. And then, as if God himself had lifted it from him, it was gone. Tears filled his eyes as he started walking, and then jogging, and then running toward Jacob. It didn't matter anymore. It didn't matter. He collided with Jacob there on the plains of Gilead, wrapping his arms around his brother's neck, kissing his tear-stained cheek. Brother, brother. My twin brother. Jacob, still on the ground, was completely stunned. He didn't know what to think as he saw Esau running, not with a sword, but with open arms. Could it be possible? Is forgiveness even possible? They stood there, weeping and hugging, for what seemed like an eternity, making up for all of the lost years. And finally, Esau broke the silence. Why did you send me all those animals? Jacob let out a nervous laugh. Well, because I thought it would keep you from killing me. Esau laughed through his tears. Brother, I have everything I need. It's over. You don't owe me anything. But if you insist, I do. Trust me, I do. Jacob looked into Esau's eyes, and for a moment, Esau's face reminded him of the one he'd wrestled with the night before. He said, "It's like seeing the face of God. You have shown me mercy. You have shown me favor. Let me introduce you to my family." And right there on the plains of Gilead, a family was made whole. But one more thing remained. Esau was the first to say it, though maybe it was already on Jacob's mind. We have to go back and see Father. So they made plans. They gathered provisions. Those 400 men who had come for battle were now Jacob's protection for the journey. Maybe they spent hours, maybe days, talking over old times, catching up on lost years. And eventually Jacob set off for Shechem, where their father was waiting with a new name and a heart finally free. Esau too went home to his family with a story too wonderful for words and prepared for a journey of his own, a journey towards shalom. Friends, we've all been both of these brothers. We've been hurt and we've hurt others. We've all fallen prey to the notion that if someone hurts you, deceives you, steals from you, just cut them off and cut them out of your life. If someone votes different or looks different or loves different or speaks different, well, they don't belong in your world. And I can think all of us can see where that's gotten us. All of us can name a person in our life where shalom has been broken by the lie that you have to be 100% with me or you're my enemy. The lie that says, once you've hurt me, that's it. I don't have to forgive you. And I am not talking about a relationship where abuse or assault is the factor. That is a different conversation than what we're having right now. But right now, or next week, or sometime after November 5th, we will be standing on top of a proverbial hill with a choice to make. Are we going to burn the bridges? The vitriol and the hurt and the division too great a chasm to overcome? Are we going to do something crazy? Run full force at them with arms open, tears and love and reconciliation in our eyes, and show them what God looks like. A God who never stops running after his beloved. A God who lets us wrestle with him and let loose our anger and our hurt and just get it out of our system when we don't know what else to do. A God who sometimes has to knock some sense into us so we can become what he dreams for us. A God who has opened his arms to us, even though we don't deserve it. A God who desires shalom for us all and for us to have it with one another. It's worth it to him. Is it going to be worth it to us?